Jeff, we're in Fiji, and Fiji is often super beautiful. It's really no wonder why you guys want to be shooting Survivor out here. And then there are the other days.
Yes.
There are the times when Fiji is not so beautiful.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I mean, beautiful is in quotes because even when the rain is coming down so hard you can't see, it is beautiful.
It's a different kind of beauty.
It's a different kind of beauty, but it is part of what you want on Survivor, is that torrential downpour, the cats and dogs rain that people talk about. And we, you know, we've had it in the past out here, and all signs point to the fact that we may have it again this season, because we can see the weather patterns. We can usually see a cyclone with our team coming 5 or 6 days before it gets here. And it's amazing how many times it stays on path and hits exactly where the experts say it's going to hit. And it's interesting that the Fijian government has been in the press saying, for those of you who still don't believe global warming is happening, like the head guy of Fiji is saying, I grew up my entire life here, and I've seen the weather change in the last 10 years. And it's changing just in the few years we've been here. These storms are spectacular with their force. And you see it even just on boat rides, trying to get to a challenge location, and it's boom, boom, boom. And we're just going to a challenge and coming back. We're not living out there.
It's April 1st, 2018, 5 in the morning, day 4 of Survivor Season 37, David versus Goliath, the day that I'm supposed to leave Fiji, and I believe the itinerary is at least a little bit in doubt based on what I'm looking at right this second. This is not a recording after the fact. This is happening live, at least in my life, as I'm watching the wind whip through bushes, whip rain all over the place, the speed and ferocity of the rain changing every other minute, lightning flashing in the sky, thunder booming every once in a while. I'm looking out into the horizon, and the waves of the ocean are ferocious. There is no question about it. This is the scariest Survivor weather I have ever witnessed in person. It's the fourth day of the game, and it's several days in a row now of weather that's like this that has only been escalating. As you're listening to this, as I'm recording this, the first one out of the game has already been named. 19 other people are currently weathering this weather. I do not envy a single one of the 20. For The Hollywood Reporter, in collaboration with Rob Has a Podcast, I'm Josh Brutto. This is First One Out, The Storm.
Chapter 1. Across the Sea.
So, tell me who you are and what you're doing out here.
So, that's an excellent question, Josh.
A long way of getting to the standard first question.
Yeah, so my name's Christian Hubicki. I'm a robotics research scientist. I'm 32 years old, and I'm here on Survivor for some reason.
I'm Natalie Cole, been a big fan, a super fan, for Survivor since it debuted. Since the beginning. And I knew since the beginning I would be on the show. In fact, I spoke it out and I said, I'm going to do that show one day.
My name's Pat Cusack. I'm from Albany, New York. I'm a blue-collar guy. You know, I get up every day and put my pants on, hike my bridges up, strap my belt, and go to work.
My name is Natalia Azoka, and I'm going to win Survivor because I'm a survivor. I'm a winner, and I'm competitive.
Yeah, my name is Elizabeth Olson, and I'm 31 years old from the Piney Woods in East Texas, a town called Longview. And I'm here to kick some butt and win Survivor.
So tell me who you are and what you're doing.
All right. My name is Allison Raybould. I'm 28 years old, originally from Kansas City. And I am now a doctor in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Nice.
Yeah.
So tell me who you are and what you're doing out here.
What I'm doing out here?
Yeah.
So my name is Lirsa Torres. Well, my full name is Lirsa Maria Torres Velez, but it's too long.
And so you're shortening.
Yeah, Lirsa, because I know that one is difficult.
How do I pronounce it? Lirsa?
Yeah, it's like, do you know what a Learjet is?
No.
It's like a tiny, like, plane, like a jet.
Okay.
So it's like Lear.
Okay, Lear.
Sa.
Sa, got
Lirsa.
It.
Lirsa, yeah, awesome. Yeah.
I'm Gabby, and I'm going to win Survivor because I've got the intelligence and the empathy.
I'm Dan Rendering, and I'm going to win Survivor because I can bring a completely different social game than anybody's ever brought to this game. You know, doing what I do as a cop, you know, talking to people and dealing with people's problems. This is what I do on a regular basis.
I am the sole survivor. You hadn't heard?
I haven't heard the news yet.
Season 37, we already taped. No, I am Jeremy. I am from New York, originally from South Carolina, but I've been in New York about 15 years.
Cool.
I'm an attorney, but of course I wouldn't say that on the show.
So you're not going to tell people you're an attorney?
No, who does that? It's season 37. Nobody's that crazy.
What are you? What are you out here?
I am a recruiter.
Okay.
For nonprofits.
Okay.
So we're going to see how that works.
My name's Nick Wilson. I'm from Williamsburg, Kentucky. Okay. Southeastern Kentucky. And I'm a public defender.
Okay, so my name is Bea Nguyen, and I'm a contestant on Survivor.
How does that feel?
It feels crazy. Like, why am I doing this? But I'm so excited.
My name is John Hennigan. A lot of people in the wrestling world know me as the mayor of Slamtown, the shaman of sexy, the prince of parkour, the Wednesday night delight. I wrestled under the ring names of Johnny Nitro, John Morrison, Johnny Mundo, and Johnny Impact. And I'm down here to win $1 million.
Carl, how are you?
I'm great, man.
Tell me everything.
I'm fixing to be on fucking Survivor, man. I mean, you know, how do you think I am? I'm ecstatic, man.
You're feeling pretty good.
Oh yeah, yeah, feeling very, very good.
So does it kind of like feel like you're in like this like weird waking dream, or maybe nightmare would be more appropriate?
No, it's a dream. It's a dream. I'm going into this like so stoked to be here, like honored. I just, you know, like only a few hundred people get to play this game in the entire history of the world, right? And like, for some reason, I get to be one of them. So I'm just like, I'm happy and I'm stoked.
So what's going on? What brought you out here?
Is this the pod? Are we, what was
this? This is the podcast. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been watching since like the first episode. And I don't know, after a while, you watch these and you're like, I'm tired of watching this. I want to do this.
You just want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you come out here not really knowing what to expect at all, and now everything's starting to form around you and the excitement's building, and it's just the anticipation of actually getting into the game is killing me.
I'm sure.
I'm ready to go.
How are you feeling, man?
Bro, I'm freaking psyched.
Are you like tweaking out? Like,
no, I'm just like, dude, if anything, I'm just like annoyed.
Why?
Because I'm like jumping out of my skin, dude. I want to start.
Yeah.
So it's like right now, it's just like that period where they like take everyone and it's like going through like all this, like obviously all like the B-roll, the press, the pictures.
I'm right.
Like, just let me fucking play already.
Also like the lockdown stuff on Ponderosa. Yeah. Is that tough?
It's very difficult for me, and it's been really hard to not just smile at everyone. I want to just make everyone my friend, and I think everyone's like, who is this crazy psycho, like smiley blonde girl? She's just everywhere smiling at everyone. So I think it can either help me or hurt me, but I'm just really eager to meet people and get to the nitty-gritty of who each person is.
Overall, looking at the cast, do you like the cast? Do you feel good about it?
I love this cast already, man. I feel like they're already going to be lifelong friends for me. I follow all of the Survivor people on my nerd page, and I just see the Survivor family hashtags, and it seems like a big family, and I feel like all 20 of us will set in straight.
I'm saying on the record, I thought Ghost Island was fantastic. This group, so far, every bit is good.
Yeah.
And when we have great people, we tend to have a great season. Because we can do all the creative we want, but if the people aren't interesting, nobody cares. And I think we have another great group of people.
Survivor is back, and so is First One Out. For any newcomers, a quick primer. Survivor is a television series that's been on the air for nearly 20 years, in which strangers from all walks of life are stranded in the middle of nowhere, forced to build and destroy their own new worlds, befriending and backstabbing each other in whatever measure they like, all on a 39-day quest to win a $1 million prize. One person wins, everyone else loses, and somebody loses first, cast out of the game after only 3 days, their dreams destroyed like a ship in a storm. In modern Survivor, the middle of nowhere goes by a more specific name, Fiji. The island nation has hosted Survivor for 3 years and counting, with no end in sight. In addition to being Survivor's current place of residence, not to mention being one of my favorite words to say on this podcast, Fiji is also the site of some incredibly turbulent weather. At least it is during my latest visit, thanks to the presence of Josie, a tropical cyclone with the temperament of a certain Brazilian dragon. Luckily, on the morning the game begins, Josie's in the middle of a nap. The 37th edition of Survivor commences on March 29, 2018, shortly before noon, as 20 men and women stand on a cargo ship in the middle of the Fijian Sea, their adventure about to begin. Standing before the players is the host with the most, Jeff Probst, master of ceremonies in front of the camera and behind the curtain alike. Looking out at the new players, already divided into two tribes, Lord I Mean Jeff proceeds to explain the theme of the game ahead with the following dramatic words. Survivor is a game of social politics that often revolves around the story of the underdog versus the favorite, the physically weak versus the physically strong, the socially awkward versus the naturally charming. It's an enduring matchup that's provided some of our greatest showdowns. What complicates Survivor is the unknown. You have no idea what to expect, what skill set will come in handy, and anything about the other players. The question isn't who has the advantage, it's what is the advantage. This is Survivor, David versus Goliath. Really? Nobody? No one's biting? Come on, at least it's better than Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, am I right? Look, however you're reacting to the theme right now, that's between you and your Survivor deity of choice. I can tell you how the players responded in the moment. With thunderous applause, thanks in no small part to the gigantic Survivor David versus Goliath banner that unfurled behind the contestants at just the right time. Before long, the enthusiasm became something else. The David tribe, consisting of 10 men and women who are quote-unquote used to proving people wrong and defying expectations, were thrilled with their designation, almost without exception. The opposite was true of the Goliath tribe, a group Probst describes as 10 strangers with one thing in common, winning, and being used to having the advantage to squash their opponents. If Probst expected chest-thumping from the purple-buffed Goliaths, he didn't get it, at least not easily. It required some time, some finesse, and a healthy back and forth between the Goliaths before they ultimately came around to their place in the Survivor food chain, more or less. At first, the back and forth was a matter of words alone. In time, it became a matter of action. After several minutes of opening banter, the Survivors were thrust into the first battle of the game, designed to embody the season's theme. Here's the premise of the opening challenge, in which the tribes are playing for a day one shelter building kit. It begins with the Goliaths, who are tasked with selecting two champions from their own ranks, while also selecting who they perceive to be the two quote-unquote weakest members of the David tribe. The four players will then compete in a 2v2 obstacle course, one that's essentially designed by David's designated weaklings. To be clear, the sprawling challenge, occurring entirely on the cargo ship, was built and designed by the brilliant John Kierhofer and his team. But it's a challenge built for customization, with three distinct stages that each have three distinct ways forward. Not only do the Davids get to decide which path is theirs, they also get to select the path of their enemy. Put another way, Goliath chooses the gladiators while David picks the weapon. No spoilers on the results, except for this. The way the challenge plays out is physical, fierce, and flat-out fun. Jeff Probst, how are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to have you back on location.
Great to be back here for David versus Goliath. How are you feeling? We're talking about like 2-3 hours after the marooning.
Excellent. That marooning was one of the most packed in terms of content and people talking and opinions being expressed and debates breaking out. I love it. I thought it spoke... It was a good idea, I think, of what the season's going to be about.
Yeah. I'm prone to hyperbole. People know this about me at this point. You and I were talking a little bit before we got on the record. I think that this was the best marooning that I've seen in 5 times on location.
I love hearing that because I'm kind of in it. You know, there's a lot of things.
No kind of about it. You're in it.
I'm in it.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a lot happening. And part of me is trying to track that, make sure we're doing everything. And then part of me is all obviously listening. But to hear you come back and say, no, there was great content, confirms what I was feeling out there, which is, wow, this is really, it's like a tribal council, and we haven't even started.
So we'll get into the specifics of what happened later on. Let's just do some setup first. But while we're on the subject of the marooning, can you talk a little bit about what you guys planned for today, what the idea was behind the marooning?
Here's the backstory. The idea behind David versus Goliath really steals a lot from Malcolm Gladwell's book, David versus Goliath, where he talks about the idea that it, in life, it's not always who has the advantage, but what is the advantage. And so the task that I went to the challenge team with was, how do we make a challenge in which we can, we have this idea that we would let the Goliath tribe pick the weakest David members and the strongest Goliath members, and then let the Davids decide who would run which parts of the challenge. So how do we come up with this idea of challenge elements that would capture all the different qualities you might need on Survivor when we don't even really know who's on the show yet?
Right.
I think it's the biggest task they've ever had, maybe since White Collar, Blue Collar, No Collar, and they pulled it off. And what you end up with is this battle for who will do a better job of getting advantage on their side. And out of the gate, you saw the result.
It was cool because, you know, you've got the Goliaths, they get to pick the fighter, but the Davids kind of get to pick the battle.
Great way to look at it. I wish I'd have said that out there.
But that's sort of the idea.
Yes, that is the idea. And there's no right answer.
They get to pick the slingshot.
Yes, exactly. And so if the Goliaths lose, they will say, well, that's not fair. They get to decide what we run. And I would say, but you got to pick their weakest people to run it. And if the Davids lose, they'll say, well, we never had a chance. You picked our weakest people. We were dead from the start. So there's always a defense if you lose. But what I think it illustrates and sets up is that Survivor is a game in which every single day you have to ask yourself, okay, what's the advantage right now? Not who has it. What is it?
Yeah, I think that that's a really interesting way of flipping that question, because I do think, you know, you come into Survivor and you're wondering who has the idol, who has the second vote, who has the vote steal, who has this, who's got that. And really asking the question more of what's out there and what's out there for you to grab.
Another complimentary idea on this is John Nash's idea on game theory was you as a player have to make your best move with the assumption that every other player is making their best move. It doesn't mean they will, but the only way to really play a high level game is to assume that if I'm playing Josh, Josh's best move right now would be to do this. So I'm going to make this move to counter it. And if I'm right, I'll win. So that's what's happening on Survivor. To your point, another player may have the idol. That doesn't mean they have the advantage right now. The advantage could be not having an idol, because now I'm not a threat. So every day you have to think about, how do I want to handle it? Which is why sometimes you see people win an advantage and say, look, I won the advantage and I don't want it. They're trying to figure out what's the best move.
So in terms of the season itself, David versus Goliath, Like, I imagine you embarking on some epic 39-day adventure off into the wilderness, and you come back with this great day 39 beard and this eureka idea, David versus Goliath. I'm sure it's less, you know, legendary than that, but how did you come to David versus Goliath?
Well, David versus Goliath is not a new idea. We've certainly had it in our hopper, but it just never felt unique enough, because it's kind of what we do in some ways all the time, until this guy Pat walked in. And Pat is from upstate New York and has had a heck of a life. Started out in the hole with a mother who was paralyzed and a dad who wasn't around, living paycheck to paycheck. He'd never been on a plane. In fact, when he flew out for casting and they told him the flight was going to land at 3, he looked at his watch and said, "It's 3, why are we still in the air?" And she said, "Well, there's a time change, sir." I mean, that guy, to me, when we met him, I left and I went, we got to base a season around that guy. What is that guy? And then over a course of months, it became clear he really is. That's the David. That's a David we can get behind. It's not Cochran, who's a David that went to Harvard. This is a true David. And that's why he's on this show and this season. And then we just started meeting people, realizing, wow, people are either a David or they're a Goliath. There are very few people that are both. And to further it, we changed our psych profiling to look for that.
Okay.
And then as every person would leave, Matt and I and the other producers, we'd say, seems like a David. Then we would talk to our psychology team and they would say, David. And you could see that this is how they see themselves. And these Goliaths see themselves this way. And what we realized in the process was all of these people work hard and accomplish things, but it's how they see the world is what defines how they see themselves.
Yeah. So how did you start to define the Goliath versus the David? You had a very clear example in a guy like Pat. To you, what's a Goliath?
To me, a Goliath is like John Hennigan. Came out of a family that supported him in every way. He wanted to be a WWE wrestler, even though his family was professional in other ways. He wanted to go that route, wrestled, became the wrestler, is a title holder, also very smart, high IQ. He's everything. Good looking, has maximized his body, very well spoken, owns every bit of it, does not shy away. He wears a jacket to let you know I'm
mayor
something.
Of Slamtown.
I'm mayor of Slamtown. That's a Goliath. And what I like about John is he's not about to say, yeah, I'm kind of a David. No. I'm a Goliath. Look at my track record. The crux of it with those two guys is, if you just look at the two men, Pat versus John, and you put them on Survivor, you can't say out of the gate, oh, well, John will beat Pat every time. You don't know what the season's going to be about. You don't know who they're going to play with. You don't know what the twists are. You don't know if it's going to rain every day and John hates being wet. We don't yet know the situation. And until we know the situation, we can't define the advantage.
Right. What is the disadvantage, too, you know, in a situation like
Same
that?
Same other way of looking at it. Yeah. Exactly.
I also like that the idea of the season, it kind of speaks to what you guys do with this show. You know, you are certainly Goliaths in this space in television, but in terms of the making of Survivor, you're often slinging stones at some sort of unseen giant, whether it's Mother Nature or coming up with the next idea. Does it feel like it kind of embodies the process of making
the
show?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but I think that's exactly how I would say it. I think you're right.
You know, 37 seasons in, you know, getting close to 2 decades of Survivor, like, how do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it going? This kind of like, to me, embodies sort of that idea in a metaphorical and, you know, named way.
I love that you are educating me still about the show, because I don't think I would have thought of that. But now when I think of it, even going back to season one, with a crew of only 85 compared to 350 now, 5 boats compared to 40.
Right.
We were Davids. We were doing what seemed impossible, making a television show in a jungle with a format nobody had ever heard of, with real people who didn't know what the point was. And I think you're right, much like a David, I know, just speaking for myself, nothing scares me on Survivor, because I feel like we have a good enough team. We've been in holes before, and we can find a way out. So let's just go big, and we'll have some setbacks, but we'll fix it. We'll find it. We'll find a way out.
So digging into sort of the what we saw at the Marooning today a little bit, I thought it was so fascinating how readily the Davids owned who they were and how quickly the Goliaths were like, Jeff, I think he gave me the wrong buff. What was your reaction to the way that this played out?
Yeah, I was equally shocked. And so while the Goliaths were defending that they weren't necessary Goliaths and that they had worked really hard to get where they were, my brain was scrambling trying to figure out what is it that they're telling us that I don't understand yet, because this is important and it's universal. They're all saying it. And while they were talking, in the back of my mind, I was telling my own story to myself and realizing I am just like them. This is what I think the Goliaths were saying, is that they feel like because they've been successful, people think it's been easy. And they want to make it clear, to be a doctor, as Allison was talking about, is incredibly difficult. She didn't want the fact that she had supportive parents and a dad who was a doctor to make it sound like it was easy, so I just became a doctor. And what I found in myself was my own ego speaking when people say to me, you're so lucky you know how to do that survivor thing. I want to say, lucky? I mean, I've been working since I was 12 watching Johnny Carson on a little black and white TV trying to figure out how people do this.
You've been building this.
I've been building it and working on it. But definitely I'm a Goliath. I was born in America as a white male, a knapsack of advantage, a loving family who supported me every bit of the way. I am a Goliath and I've worked hard. And I think that's what they were saying, is please don't tell me I had it handed to me.
Right.
But it took a while. It was very confusing. And even to the point where we actually did a really interesting impromptu comparison. Allison, the doctor, set herself up by trying to play like she wasn't really a Goliath and didn't have advantage. And you saw it. I said, okay, let's compare stories.
Right.
To which she said, well, I am.
Well, okay.
Yeah, I guess I am upper class.
Point taken.
Yes. Yeah. My dad was a doctor. What do you do? I'm a doctor. Cut to Pat. Pat, tell me about your bringing. Paycheck to paycheck. In a trailer. Mom was paralyzed. Dad was not around. What about medical school? College wasn't even an option.
Yeah. So that really plainly stated it.
There we go. David versus Goliath.
So you also talked a little bit about, or at least it was. I felt like it was like spoken about on the boat, that this could be a journey of transformation, right?
Yeah.
David can become Goliath.
Yeah.
Are you excited about that possibility of this adventure? And Goliaths could be David's? Can you go back from being a Goliath?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think Goliaths struggle just like anybody, but they've come out of the gate with advantage. That's the difference. But could a David become a Goliath? Absolutely. It's all state of mind. I think we have a Goliath in bloom, in Dan, the SWAT cop. I don't think he's a fully fledged Goliath. I think he's fronting a little bit. He's now, in this current state of his life, this super handsome, very charming SWAT cop. I mean, is there a better definition of Goliath?
Right.
But not that long ago, he was much heavier, low self-esteem, no confidence. He wasn't a Goliath. So what I expect the story will get from him will be when he sits down and really talks about it, he'll probably say, I'm on my way. I'm definitely not a David.
Right.
I am a Goliath, but I haven't fully owned it yet. And maybe out here is when Dan has a transformation and says, I am not the guy who was heavy. I'm not the guy who didn't have self-confidence. I'm this guy now. I'm the guy that girls ask me if I'm a stripper because they can't believe I'm a real cop.
Right.
I am a real cop and I'm a real Goliath. And yes, it would be amazing if there was a David who at some point in the journey, like Elizabeth, takes her cowboy hat and throws it in the fire and says, I don't need this hat anymore. Damn it, I'm a Goliath and I'm done with that old story. I have climbed out of these mountains and I belong up here and I don't see myself that way. But to be honest, Josh, not being a David, or seeing myself as a David,
right.
I don't know if Davids become Goliaths. Maybe that's their magic, is that they're always a David.
Yeah.
You just don't know my secret weapon yet.
Speaking of secret weapons, a new advantage is making its debut in Season 37, saddling up alongside the Hidden Immunity Idol, the Extra Vote, and the Legacy Advantage as part of Survivor's War Chest. Gather round the blackboard, kids. Professor Probst will explain it all.
So what is the advantage is the idea. What is the advantage in the opening of this show? Is there anything that you can say in terms of idols, anything that we're getting into with the first 3 days?
There's no opening day advantage. No, we didn't put anything.
It's been a minute since that's been the case. Is that a conscious choice?
You know,
or it's just kind of that's where we are?
It's just kind of where we are. We don't really even look at last season. We just sit down and say, what are we feeling? And we felt like the theme was enough. And luckily, we were right. We got plenty of material. But we do have at least one new thing I can tell you about that we are excited about. It's called the Idol Nullifier.
Okay.
And so the way it will work is we're probably just going to have it play once. It depends when it gets played. If it gets played super early, it may come back in the game. But the way the Idol Nullifier works is you find it, and what it says is this will nullify any idol played. But the trick is you have to play it when you vote. So the situation would be, I'm at camp, I have an idol nullifier. I think you, Josh, have an idol, or I know you have one. And I think you're going to play it tonight. I'm trying to get you to play it. I don't know if you're going to play it for you or for Lori, but I think you're going to play it. I have this nullifier. So when I go up to vote, I have a decision to make. If I decide to play it in private, where no one can see me, I say, I'm playing this idol nullifier against Josh playing his idol. And I write the name down and I drop it in the urn. We come time to read the votes. I say, if anybody has an idol and they want to play it, now's the time to do so.
I stand up.
You stand up and play your idol. And you dance around super proud. You bring it over to me and I say, this is a hidden immunity idol. And then I reach into the urn and say, and this is an idol nullifier. Any votes cast against Josh will count. And so that first time we play it, it will be a big twist, and it will be anonymous. Nobody there will know who played it except the guy or girl who has it or whoever they've told. And if you stand up and don't play your idol, then I never show the idol nullifier, and the person who played it blew it.
That's really exciting. So just a couple of follow-ups on that. So I am the person who has the idol. I play the idol. Let's say I play it on Lori. And does the person who has the idol nullifier have to play it specifically on the person who's protected?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So it's a guessing game.
Yeah.
So if I go up there to vote, I would say, I know Josh is playing it. The question is
who's he playing
it for, him or Lori? I think it's him. And then if you stand up and say, I'm playing this for Lori, it doesn't work. So now imagine we're two or three seasons in and everybody knows of the nullifier. Now we've added another layer of gamesmanship, which is, are you going to try to psych me out with my idol nullifier? Or am I trying to get you to play it? We're just looking to add other layers. And you know, one of the things people bring up sometimes is, wow, you got to be careful you don't have too many twists. You got to be careful you don't have too many advantages. For sure. We get that. We don't think we're there yet.
Yeah.
We think that, you know, it's fun. It makes episodes more fun.
Yeah.
And without them, like when people say, what about a season with no advantages? I just think, I don't think you're really thinking through that. I think it would get kind of boring.
Yeah. Does it look like anything, or is it just parchment?
Do we not have it yet? No, we have it. But I want to save that for the reveal when somebody first finds it.
Okay, cool.
But it will not look like an idol, and it will not look like parchment.
It'll look like an idol nullifier.
Exactly.
How long has this one been in the works? Because I feel like in like band circles when they are just like tossing ideas at the wall, like I feel like I've heard that before, but not through this like execution. Has this been something that's been on the wall?
Yeah, we've had the idea of a nullifier, but every time we walked through it, we went, but the minute you have an idol nullifier, then it negates the drama because we know that if somebody plays their idol, you'll play the idol nullifier. And then we realized, aha, it's when
first.
They play it. Again, what is the advantage?
That's awesome.
Who has the advantage? So what is the advantage here is you have to play it before they play it, so you're betting on it. And now there's still drama because you don't know if you played it for the right person and you don't know if they're going to play it at all.
In the heart of the Fijian jungle, it bursts forth from the ground like a six-fingered hand. Tribal Council, the deadliest arena in Survivor's gladiatorial game. This season, the Terrible Temple has been designed to accommodate the idol nullifier, with a horizontal beam blocking players' view of the voting booth. It's a testament to the creative powers of Survivor art guru Dax Poynton, one of the key visionaries responsible for bringing tribal council to life each season. A task that's become increasingly complicated the longer Survivor stays in one place.
All right, Dax, here we are at Tribal Council again.
Yeah, indeed.
Indeed we are. A pleasure to be speaking with you, as always. Yeah. Masterful work, as always.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about the Tribal Council for Survivor David versus Goliath.
Okay, so this was a tricky one to come up with. Something fresh with such a specific, you know, theme and creative. So we had to really put our thinking caps on and get really outside the box for what we'd normally expect to see from, you know, this kind of tropical environment. So we figured that we were talking, you know, David versus Goliath. It's gladiatorial. It's you know, one-on-one. So the first thing we thought of was like an arena of some description, you know, like a, you know, a gladiator's arena, some sort of battle arena, which doesn't really lend itself that well to, say, you know, tropical islands. So the closest we could think of you know, civilizations or some sort of backdrop that would have that kind of context in a jungle was, you know, something like Aztecs or... You know, even the several Polynesian cultures themselves, you know, Maoris, you know, any sort of warrior islanders. So that's where we sprung from.
Yeah.
And so we did a blend of that, all of those different cultures mixed in with, like, you know, colorful feathers and you know, warrior masks and shields and things of that nature. Put them all in a blender and blended them up and came up with our own. Our own flavor this time, which is where we're going now. Fortunately, we have a lot of fun with it. So
more and more building your own universes. That's
exactly,
we've talked
that's,
about.
That's it. You know, so as you can see, you know, we've taken aspects of all those different cultures, blended them together. We've got like an Aztec calendar dial, but it's got, you know, Polynesian. Influences in there with, you know, almost like a tiki face instead. You know, I mean, it doesn't really feel that much of a leap in imagination when you look at it and you actually take a step back and think of how some of these cultures kind of worked in, you know, massive stones and that kind of... you know, it all seemed to... come together in a way that seemed natural. So that's the key, is making it seem natural ultimately.
Survivor, season 37, day 3.
Stormy weather before the first immunity challenge of Survivor season 37, David versus Goliath. It's happening. It's real. Oh, it's miserable. Tough conditions, Bob Windsor?
It is, and getting worse. You know, I hate it when it deteriorates by the minute.
And it really is. It's by the day, by the minute, by every observable metric of time, it is just getting worse. Oh, rough.
My wife says, so how's the weather? And it's just rain and wind every day. Every day and every night.
Yeah, and no one feels bad for you because you're in Fiji.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm sure you have moments of sun where you can, you know, lie out. No.
I mean, you could,
yeah.
But it's a mud bath.
Yeah, it's a mud bath.
Hi, guys. I have officially never seen it rain like this on Survivor. It is like full-on monsoon mode right now, and this challenge is happening, rain or shine. Matt Van Wagman walking towards me right now with a huge smile on his face.
Come
on, this is great, right?
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, now what would you be doing if you were a contestant right now?
Shitting my pants?
Yeah, I figure that.
Probably.
A la Steven?
Yeah, also probably if it was sunny, I would be doing the same thing, but especially with this downpour.
But this is good. It's like football. It's like the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter what the weather is. We're continuing.
That's what I was saying, rain or shine.
But this is dumping.
It's dumping.
It's dumping.
Game on.
That's going to be awesome. All right.
Good stuff.
Far away from the immunity challenge, safe and warm within the blissfully dry office of Survivor executive producer Matt Van Wagenen, a refrigerator plays a tune. As the melody exudes from the electric refrigeridoo, MVW and I take a moment to survey what's lurking outside in the Fijian wilderness.
Can you describe, like, how shitty it can get out here in Fiji? Because you guys love Fiji. We're here in Fiji. We've been here in Fiji. We will be here in Fiji for Survivor. And it's beautiful from time to time, most of the time. But sometimes it sucks.
Really bad. Yeah, sometimes it's awful. The funny thing is, if you look back at Millennials versus Gen X, you saw a pretty, as you put it, shitty situation. I mean, that weather was brutal. And it isn't just hard on the contestants. It's hard on us, too. I mean, just getting a boat out to drop off a crew becomes a task. And it's not just contestants that get evacuated. We do as well. You know, we're up in rooms that are boarded up. And so we've seen it pretty bad. But as bad as it was in Millennials versus Gen X just a couple months before that, we had a cyclone that was much bigger,
right,
named Winston. And that went through and just tore up our sets. It tore up a lot of the islands. I mean, if you just, you know, look, you know, because we've been in Fiji and using some of the same islands, you look at the footage on one island 1 year compared to the next, and you see what it's like when a cyclone comes through. I mean, it literally, there were trees after Winston that were stripped completely bare. Winds were coming in and picking up sand, and half of a tree was completely sandblasted. So you'd have bark on only one side of the tree because the sand picked up and just ripped off everything living off of one half of a tree. So it can be pretty brutal. I mean, we're talking like dangerous. But the truth is like when it starts raining for like 6, 7, 8, 9 days straight, it can be pretty awful. And that's any location. We saw it in Cambodia with some pretty rough.
That was like 2 weeks of rain or something.
Two weeks of rain. We saw it at the beginning of Samoa, Heroes of Villains. That was pretty rough. We've had some time in Nicaragua where it rained quite a bit.
Philippines was pretty memorable with like the Malcolm and Denise and Russell Swan episode.
It's funny. I haven't actually sat there before and actually thought about all the different shitty times I've had out there because it isn't, it's shitty for everything. It makes the production terrible. Because we're doing a lot. We are we're bringing crews out to shoot the contestants. We have cameras going down. We're working on challenges. We work on challenges weeks ahead of time. I mean, you've been out here and seen it. But if we're planning on a shoot that's on the water and we have tornado or cyclones coming through and bad weather, we can't get those challenges built. We've had damage to tribal council before, and in seasons where there's a lot of damage, it feels like we're always kind of under the gun, but we have amazing people. Our marine department is incredible, and these are people who have worked all over the world, and they're used to this type of thing, and they always come through for us.
We're spending a lot of time on the rain right now for a very simple reason. This season, it's a factor. It certainly was during my week on location, as storms came and went with alarming regularity. Rocking the ocean like an overzealous kid on a seesaw, it's hard to do justice to the intensity of the weather. But in the spirit of trying, here's some very bad audio from one of the very bad boat rides I weathered during that week out in Fiji. Don't let my jovial tone of voice fool you. That's just what I normally sound like, except for when I'm doing my foo thing. What you just heard was panicked laughter from yours truly and the other members of the Survivor 37 press corps, out in the middle of the Fijian Sea on March 30th,
late in the afternoon, on our way home from production's base camp, back to our hotel on another island. This boat ride normally takes 20 minutes or so, shore to shore. On this day, it took 90 minutes. We took solace in the idea that this bad boat ride would someday become a great memory, until we experienced three more boat rides just like it, and worse. Eventually, we settled on a new silver lining. At least our days at sea were imminently numbered. While the 20 cast members of David vs. Goliath entered the game ready to live out their wildest dreams, they quickly found themselves swimming through a physical nightmare. The social and political storms of Survivor are tricky enough to navigate without having to worry about an actual storm. But actual storms don't answer to the Survivor gods. Tropical Cyclone Josie and her kind answer to another power altogether, Mother Nature. For the record, it's worth noting at this point that I am a wimp, certainly compared to the brave souls who voluntarily weather the Survivor weather, crew and castaways alike. And in the case of the latter category, this season's Survivor players stepped into the arena with figurative umbrellas at the ready. Exhibit A, robot scientist Christian Hubicki of the David tribe, all too happy to size up his future friends and enemies, even in the midst of a downpour.
What do you think about her?
Oh, again, she's tough. She's gonna, I think she's here to play. She looks extremely athletic. She can't. Sorry, Josh. I'll speed it up.
Yeah, what no, you? You're so, all good.
Okay.
This is, yeah, it's this raining is here. Well, let's pause down just to say it's really coming down.
It's really coming down here. It's okay. You know, I gotta get used to this. It's fine.
Yeah. How are you feeling with the rain? I mean, we're trying to have like a conversation about Survivor and the people that you're up against right now, yeah, as it's just dumping on us.
Yes, it's happening. And, you know, it's. And I'm fine with it. Are you okay?
Josh? Oh yeah, yeah. I love
so,
it.
Yeah. No, I don't mind the elements. My tent is like the coziest thing right now at Ponderosa.
Right. Right.
So it's, unfortunately, we won't have those. No, so back to this young woman. She is, she's. I think she might be one of the female challenge beasts of the season, is my guess. But also, obviously, looks great. And but she's again giving lots of glances around, and so I think she's looking to make alliances. So I'm curious to see how this all coalesces when you hit the beach. All these pregame stuff, because while you can't win the game in the pregame, you can lose it,
yeah,
in the pregame. Is my impression.
The woman Christian was discussing is the person who I am now presenting as Exhibit B, the Goliath tribe's Kara Kay, a California realtor in the midst of realizing the reality of Survivor.
I haven't gotten down about it yet because I'm like, I know it's going to rain. I mean, just being in the elements for this amount of days, I know what's going to come. But yeah, making fire and sleeping outside at night with no fire because there's raining, like I haven't even fathomed what that's going to be like.
How are you with fire? Are you good?
Making it?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I put out fires for my job, but making them, no, not so much.
You might want to learn in the next few days probably, based on what Survivor's been doing.
Probably figure it out. Yeah.
You'll have time to practice, right?
I think so. I think I'll have some downtime.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too.
Up next, Exhibit C. Carl Boudreaux, cowboy, truck driver, and David tribe member, trading in the Texan heat for a Fijian shitstorm.
The heat part doesn't bother me. I'm from South Texas. Anybody knows anything about being in South Texas, it's fucking hot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hot, it's humid. So that part doesn't bother me. I mean, the rain, we get pop-up showers, but nothing like this. I mean, you blink your eye and it's draining, and then 5 minutes later, the sun's back shining.
Ground's,
you know,
pretty
what I
muddy
mean?
Right,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So, you know, I mean, it's going to be a challenge, but I've never been afraid of a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's been my life. You know, my life has always been about challenges. And so this is just another hurdle that I have to cross, you know.
Exhibit D, the David tribe's appropriately named Davy Rickenbacker, a.k.a. Devilish Davy, a Walking Dead enthusiast who takes every single facet of his Survivor experience as a sign, cyclone conditions included.
So it's pouring right now.
Yeah.
Is that, like, terrifying because this is what you're about to get into, or is it exhilarating?
Man, that's the Survivor gods talking to me still, saying, Davey, you need to get invested in this game. You arrived late. You got to get your sleep pattern together. We're trying to throw you in the midst of this so that you know it's real.
What Davey said about arriving in Fiji late? More on that coming soon. The point is, this season's Survivor players not only have a readiness about them, but an eagerness as well, And with good reason. Many of the cast members have been dreaming about their Survivor journey since the very first season, including the David Tribe's Pat Cusack, the man Probst credits as the inspiration for the season's theme. Hailing from upstate New York, Pat's trip out to Fiji marks only the second time he's ever traveled by plane. And his first time was a Survivor-related trip as well.
Until this whole ordeal started, really? I was never on a... Until Survivor started, when I went out to California for final castings, that was the first time I was ever on an airplane.
Really?
You know? The first time I ever swam in the ocean was today.
Wow.
You know? So it's already given me a lot of things.
That's awesome, man.
You know, it's already given me so much already.
Yeah.
And it's just making my journey that much more complete.
Similar to Pat, Natalie Cole of the Goliath Tribe has been watching and waiting for her chance to get on Survivor since the very beginning. Natalie, a Goliath in her industry, believes her success in the corporate world will serve her well out here in the bush.
It's layers and layers and layers of absolute chaos, and it tries to be somewhat organized, and it's dealing with people, not only dealing with, but managing, manipulating, directing people from all walks of life, and while you have your end goal in mind, you're managing all this stuff on the periphery, and it's really quite similar to what I did when I climbed the corporate ladder.
Yeah.
In my younger years, I've met every conceivable character on my way up, and guess what? I've already started. We've been checking each other out, though we're not speaking yet. I think I see a couple of familiar faces here.
When Natalie talks about familiar faces, she means it. In her preseason assessments of the other castaways, she looked at her competitors and sees echoes of past Survivor players. To give one example, Natalie sees a certain purple pants wearing badass lurking within the heart of her fellow Goliath tribe mate Jeremy Crawford, a lawyer from New York who's also had his eye on playing Survivor for years.
I've been a huge Survivor fan for a long time. And each season at the end, I think I would be really good on this show. But then I always think, I would be horrible on this show. Because I have characteristics that make me, I'm strategic, I'm a people person, but I also have other characteristics. I can be a hothead sometimes. I don't want to be in the rain trying to make fire, you know. So I'm always, it was the battle in my head of, can you do it? But I just love the ability to learn more about yourself, and I love the ability to test what I think I know about myself, and I finally was just like, just do it.
Much like Jeremy, Bea Nguyen of the David Tribe also sees Survivor as an opportunity to test herself. The warrior known within the MMA world as the Killer Bee is new to Survivor. And by new, I mean really new.
I started watching the show like a month and a half ago, but like I'm
so you've been doing a lot of cramming.
Yeah, I've finished six seasons, and I'm obsessive, and I'm so intrigued. And what I'm interested in most of all is that you don't really know at what point and what it is that made the winner. So there's like physically people that just kill all the physical stuff, but they don't quite win. There's people that like are loved and adored at the beginning, even most throughout the show, and they don't win in the end, you know? And so I'm here myself to find out what that is, and I hope I'm going to be the one.
What's like that secret sauce?
Mm-hmm. I hope I'm the one to find out, and if I do, I'm never telling anyone. I'm not telling you. Interview me again later, yeah. And I won't tell you. You get on Survivor and find out right. For yourself, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I'm trying to find that sauce.
Beyond B, another professional fighter lurks within the Fijian jungles this season. John Hennigan, the mayor of Slamtown. The highly accomplished pro wrestler has no plans to hide his history from the other players in the game.
I don't think I'm going to hide it. I feel like it adds an extra layer of deception to this. It makes it more complicated to keep my story straight. Plus the jacket I'm wearing on the island says mayor of Slamtown on the back. So if I'm not a pro wrestler or a porn star, then who am I, right?
Those are your only options.
Right?
Or a mayor of a place called Slamtown.
I really am the mayor of Slamtown. I won in a landslide.
Mr. Mayor isn't the only famous face on Survivor this season. He's not even the only recognizable face on the Goliath tribe. Look no further than Mike White, instantly recognizable to many of his fellow castaways for a wide range of reasons. Be it due to his run on The Amazing Race, his stardom in School of Rock, or any other number of film and TV projects.
So you're going to be forthright about who you are?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Has it ever crossed your mind to not play it that way?
Only since I've been here, because I don't feel like I'm getting lots of looks of recognition.
Yeah.
But, like, in casting, I did. And so it all only takes one person.
Right.
And then, you
know. So you would err on the side of just, like, owning the story.
Yeah, I don't want people thinking that I'm dishonest from the get-go. I feel like I'd rather just, there's enough to lie about.
Right, yeah.
And I actually think it could play to my advantage. Unless, like, you know, there's some, you know, Hollywood hater, or somebody who thinks, like, oh, someone who has money shouldn't be on the show. At this point, like, that's, you know, there's enough.
So many other considerations
right,
at this
exactly.
point.
Exactly. Yeah. So my feeling is, like, you would rather sit with someone who's saying from the beginning, I'm not here for the money. Everyone knows I'm rich. Wouldn't you rather sit with me at the end? Than like some, you know, deserving, needy person who would do anything for the money and, you know, has a sob story.
There's Florida police officer Dan Rengering, also on the Goliath tribe, better known to some as the viral sensation Hot Cop, a nickname he earned while on the job during a different storm, Hurricane Irma.
Do you still get recognized?
Yeah, sometimes.
Like, do you get stopped on the street?
I have before. I actually, before we came here, I got invited as
You sign autographs, kiss babies.
I would, but it's never been asked of me, so. Yeah. One time I was recognized in Walmart by this lady. I got in line, I had my two girls with me, and she goes, oh my God, you're him. I was like, no, I'm not, what are you talking about? I'm not him. And she goes, and she looks at her husband, she goes, get out your phone and take a picture of me and him. I was mortified. I could not believe that happened. I was like, I felt so bad for the guy. I was like, oh. I was so embarrassed, but I couldn't tell her no, you know, I'm a nice
guy. Of
course,
yeah.
So, that was, yeah, occasionally.
Well, get ready for a lot of that, you know, because you're about to become big-time survivor guy. You're going to get stopped at a lot of Walmarts.
Yeah.
There are the faces and names that should not be recognizable within survivor circles quite yet, but unfortunately are. Depending on where you get your news, you may have already heard about Alec Merlino, yet another Goliath tribe member. Who entered Survivor with some goals on the mind beyond the million.
I'm amped. I think it's, like, kind of scary because, you know, like, the game does. It's 39 days, like, nothing, right? Like, no bathroom, no phone, no music. You're cut off. I don't, like, I love my family. I love my friends. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not someone, I don't like to be alone. I can be, but I don't enjoy being alone. I choose to be with people. So, like, it's going to strip you to your core, dude.
Yeah.
I'm going to be, like, left with, like, to fend for myself. And I'm like, fuck, dude, this is gnarly. But I'm like, you know, I'm not afraid of some, like, other person coming out. I think my true colors are, like, you know, I'll just be, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's just make the best of it. Like, this sucks. And there's probably going to be times where I'm frustrated, but I'm amped. And I'm amped for, like, the game. I think I'll be proud of the game I'm going to play.
Over at David, there's Jessica Pete, an 18-year-old who plans to follow the lead of another Survivor teen when it comes to disclosing her age.
I think I'm going to lie about it just because I don't want to shoot myself in my own foot. Will, whenever he played Millennials Gen X, he was still in high school. And he did a really good job, and he didn't get voted out until he started to get cocky. So there's always that chance that it could work for me.
Yeah.
But I'd rather take that precaution and just, you know, go ahead and tell people that I'm 22.
Right.
You know, so I already have, like, the backstory of 1995, graduated 2014. Obviously have to
You have that committed to memory.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to explain why I'm not drinking at challenges if we win beer or something.
What's your explanation? Do you have that covered?
I can just say that I'm just not a big drinker.
Yeah.
I don't really like to do it, especially in an environment like this where it's super hot.
Yeah.
Alcohol dehydrates you anyway. So
yeah.
It'd be easy to just say, well, I just prefer not to drink.
In addition to Michael Yerger, Jessica just name-checked Will Wall of Survivor Millennials vs. Gen X, which is a season that's near and dear to the hearts of three women on the Goliath tribe. Up first, Dr. Allison Raybould, a lapsed Survivor viewer whose fandom was rekindled rather recently.
I am a huge Survivor fan. I love this game. I'm a student of this game, and I call myself an aspiring super fan. I listen to all the podcasts that I can. I absorb as much as I possibly can. But my kind of trajectory was this. So my mom watched faithfully for all 18 years it's been on air. I watched early on when it swept the nation, and then I got, you know, distracted with pre-med and med school, how dare I, was lost to the show, and then came back for actually season 33.
Okay.
Fell in love with.
It's a good season to fall back in love with.
Oh my god, yeah. It was an amazing season. Like, Adam Klein is a fantastic winner. Like, his story moves me every time. I want to be an oncologist, so for some weird reason, like, that's significant.
Sure.
That his story was so intertwined with what my career path is going to be. But then I was hooked.
Adam Klein's victory was also the hook for Allison's tribe mate Angelina Keeley, though for different reasons altogether. Angelina and Adam are friends from college.
So that hooked you into the show, and did you start watching the show, or did you now start watching the show with the idea of, like, I want to be on the show?
Yes, exactly. So I loved it from that, you know, from that season, and then started watching it with an eye for, like, I considered it, like, studying more than entertainment, right?
Yeah.
Like, for me, I was like, I know I could win the show, and then Adam, so sweet of him, like, so kind of him, was like, Angelina, you need to be on the show.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be great. And I'm like, oh my God, like, coming from you, like, you know, super fan and also winner, like, what a blessing.
An endorsement,
right?
Yeah.
Like, geez, no pressure.
Yeah.
While Millennials versus Gen X was on the air, Goliath's Natalia Azoka found herself at the EW Pop Fest in Los Angeles. The industrial engineer spent an afternoon participating in some Survivor shenanigans, which launched her into the casting process from there.
You have to imagine that was 2 Halloweens ago that I applied.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it's been
a roller
coaster.
So you've been in the dance.
Yeah. So I've been up and down. Am I going to get on? Am I not going to get on? But I've just been very positive, and, like, I'm just...
That it would work out eventually.
Exactly. You have to have that mindset going into anything that you want, that you're going to succeed. And I think that's what I'm feeling when I'm going into Survivor. And, you know, even my family saying, don't think you're going to come to get to the jury. Don't think you're going to go home first. Think that you're going to win, because that's how you win, is when you think you're going to be a winner.
You got to visualize.
Exactly.
Back at the David camp, public defender Nick Wilson has been hoping to land on Survivor for several years now. Nick, who hopes to earn the nickname Kentucky, spent a long time in the trenches of the Survivor fandom before becoming a player was ever a serious possibility. In that time, Nick was immersed in Survivor extracurriculars, reading blogs and listening to podcasts such as, well, the one you're listening to right now.
So, Wombats Nation.
That's right.
RHAP Nation.
That's right.
Do you feel a responsibility to represent for the crowd back home?
Man, I think I do need to play a smart game to, like, uphold the strategy patron, you know, to uphold that name. I do.
You want to get a guest spot on the know-it-all.
Oh, of course.
That's what this is all about.
I don't want to be like Randy Bailey on voicemails only. I mean, I want to be a
guest. You want
too.
The premier spot.
That's right. Well, of course.
Like Nick, fellow David Tribe member Gabby Pascuzzi is also a citizen of the Survivor fan community, winding up on the show thanks to some advice she gleaned from the Hive Mind.
This sounds corny, and before I applied, I listened to all the advice from everybody on podcasts and on articles that were written or whatever, and everyone kept saying, be yourself, and that's really what it was. And what I mean by that is I'm a very open and kind of vulnerable person. I'm a very emotional person.
Okay.
And
are we getting tears this season?
Oh my gosh,
almost
I've already cried like several times. I don't even know what happens that prompts them. I'm like that in my real life too.
Cool.
So it's just, people know me, like I'll be watching a commercial that's slightly emotional and people will turn to me and I'm like, they're like, do you have tears in your eyes right now at this commercial for Kleenex? Like, how cliche.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a walking commercial for Kleenex. So anyway, I think I was just myself during casting and like, I kind of don't have a filter and I just
say
what's on my mind. And I think that being combined with being a fan and being this kind of vulnerable, maybe nerdier person is maybe what appealed to them.
Much like Gabby, there's no question that the David Tribe's Lyrsa Velez found her way to Fiji by being her most authentic self.
How are you feeling about the challenges?
I'm super scared, man. Have you seen how tall I am? I'm fucking tiny. I was watching one of those challenges that they do, like, kind of like aquatic polo, and you have to grab the ring at the end of the ocean. Man, I'm gonna drown. I can't do that. So, and the ones that are like, you have to stand, and there's like a block in your head, and you can't move. Like, I'm tiny. They will have to special costume made that thing for me. But if it's something like balance, I know I can do that. It's just like, you know, and I'm pretty decent at puzzles. I'm not going to say I'm great because then I'll get there and then I mess it up and then like, oh, you'll say you are great. And I wasn't. So I'm decent. I've been practicing puzzles on my phone. But I think I'm kind of concerned. I'm not that athletic. I do kickboxing with a fucking bag, man. Like, nobody's punching me back. So I'm a little concerned, but I'm not going to worry that much because I'm pretty sure someone else will do worse. I'll do my best. I'll give it 200%. So I'm hoping someone else will fuck it up way more than me.
Last but not least, there's the David Tribe's Elizabeth Olsen, a veritable cowgirl who very much believes she'll be the last one standing when the dust settles on the season.
Why are you going to be the winner? Why is it going to be you?
Because I'm going to try harder than anybody else. And I'm fighting for more reasons than most of them, you know? Like, I've lived enough life to know $1 million don't come your way every day. But also, I mean, I'm just a competitive person in nature. And I ain't going to come to something, I'm not going to show up to something unless I know I can win. And if I know I can, I will give everything I've got and leave it all out there on the line. So, I mean, that's how... I think I'm the most well-rounded person, socially, physically, and strategically. I really feel like that it's going to be a fun experience, and I'm going to come home with the sole survivor.
Everyone believes they're going to come home as the sole survivor. Everyone's wrong, save for one. And somewhere in the crowd lies the person who's going to get it wrong first.
So there's 20 people out here. Somebody wins. Somebody goes home first. Somebody goes through everything for 3 days on the clock and then sits around and thinks about it for 36 days, plus however long it takes to get back home and however long it takes for this show to air. Does your heart go out to the first one out?
Oh my god, my heart goes out hugely to the first one out. I know how many sacrifices I made and that people made for me so I could be here, and I know every single person out here has a story like that. So my heart breaks for the first one out. With that said, it can't be me. It cannot be me. Literally, I have put so much on the line to be here. There are patients that need me back home. I can't be sitting around Fiji doing nothing while they need me.
It would be so embarrassing. I tell everyone at work, I'm like, you guys, I'm going to tell you all just not to watch the show. Just, you'll know, but you won't know. But just don't watch the show, because I can't. Like, I don't want people to know that I went home first.
I did not come out here to have a vacation and look at Fiji. I also go extremely stir crazy. So not only would I be obviously disappointed and sad and like...
But also just deeply bored.
So bored.
Ponderosa for 36 days is like one step up from you have cancer.
I got a lot of shit that's working against me. I have more work cut out for me at the beginning of this game than anybody.
I'm
black,
so?
I'm a woman, I'm older, slightly overweight, I got blonde highlights. Anything to vote you out first, right? So I'm a first boot order in the minds of some folks, right? And I think Jeff even felt that. He's like, I don't know how you're going to make it. I said, that's not for you to worry about. That's for me to get.
Does your heart go out to the first one out?
Oh, yeah. What do you mean?
Like, do you have empathy for the first person voted out of the game?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No. Like, is somebody answer no?
Does your heart go out to the first one out of the game?
As long as it's not me, I don't give a fuck.
If I'm the first one out, I hope it is Survivor Zombie Island, and everybody you vote out returns to the tribe the next day.
So if it's you, if you're the first one out,
no way.
Nightmare scenario.
No way. If I'm the first one out, I don't even...
What would have had to have happened for you to go home first?
I don't even know. There's so many people that should go ahead of me. I don't even know.
It would have to be pretty bad.
Yeah, why are you doing this? I would have to like go off on everybody. I would have to like just tell everybody off for no reason. I think that would get me voted off because I'm athletic. I'm pleasant to be around, and in the beginning, there's no reason somebody like that should be voted off.
I don't want to be the first one. I don't think anybody wants to be the first one. But, like, yeah, no, I don't want to be that.
My heart doesn't go out to anybody. Because we all are the luckiest sons of a bitches it's ever been. We're on fucking Survivor.
To know what happened on that beach is still a mystery to me. So speaks the first one out of Survivor David vs. Goliath. 20 people. 20 possible castaways who could go home first. Their dreams dropped down in a place dark and deep. In the chapters ahead, we'll meet the candidates. Along the way, there will be no wistful walks down memory lane to bend the ears of ancient voices. There will be no ghosts, no sprawling epilogues filled with fires and flying trees. This season on First One Out, it's simply you and me, and the survivors fighting the storm across the sea. First One Out, The Storm is written, produced, and hosted by Josh Wigler. That's me! It's a collaboration between The Hollywood Reporter and Rob Has a Podcast. Taryn Armstrong is our editor. He's also a robot. Music for this podcast comes from Ben Wigler, Nick Campbell, and their late band Arizona. Listen to more at arizonatheband.bandcamp.com. Go to thr.com/survivor for more coverage, as well as my Instagram, @RoundHoward, for videos of the castaways in action. Survivor returns September 26th, and First One Out concludes on September 27th. Next time on First One Out.
Oh, Sudoku Sam.
Sudoku Sam.
I don't know what his real name is, but that's what I've been calling him in my head.
I know people are going to compare me to Cochrane.
There's still moments where I'm like, holy beep, I'm a survivor.
This is how you know you've made the right decision. You call him in the middle of the night and say, want to play Survivor in 2 days? And he says, yes, at the top of his lungs.
It all sort of starts to flow. I'm sort of wiggling my fingers around like a gas in the air.
Could you work with a guy like that, do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's like probably number one. I mean, his mom's not here, so he's gonna have me to tell him what to do.